I'm Tara, and welcome to Sagas and Sass Season 4, brought to you by Geek Saga Entertainment. This is episode 86, continuing our coverage of Lightbringer, the sixth installment in Pierce Brown's Red Rising saga.
I'm fellow Sagas and Sass host Nick. This episode is titled The Ruin of Ra, and we'll be discussing Darrow's POV from chapter 46 through chapter 56 in Tempest, part 3 of Lightbringer.
And I'm regular guest host Seth, here to remind you that our Red Rising coverage is spoiler-free outside of the chapters we cover in each episode.
That said, don't forget that the opinions are those of us as individuals, and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the show as a whole. Though, let's be real, usually we're all on the same page, or at least very close to it.
Last but not least, don't forget to check out our Patreon with 10 tiers ranging from $1 a month to $40 a month. It offers tons of ways to support us and receive some great perks in return. You can find us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment. Unfortunately, we have to move on to sad things, or at least some of them anyway, in the Ruin of Ra.
No one but Sevra was laughing when the Archie arrives in Ilium after a month and a half. They expected to see a battle. What they found was a massacre, and as much as Sevro finds it hilarious, a little bit with him on this one, Cassius, Aure, and Lyria are simply stunned. Sure, the Rim's misfortunes helped their cause, but Kaliki City, which housed Athena's contacts, is now a crater, and the Archie's Hull can't handle them entering the debris field. So they skirt the edge of it instead, and though it takes them hours, they eventually come across a fallback message from Athena. Unfortunately, she's calling all daughters back to a secret base, the location of which Aure doesn't know, and can only find out by returning to Sungrave and utilizing a hardlink comms port that she calls her Omega Torch. Sevra argues against this course, but in the end, Darrow announces that they'll head to Io, only just as they're about to leave Kaliki behind, they receive a distress signal, one that actually has a heartbeat attached. And the escape pod they pull in? Why, it contains none other than Diomedes. Sevra immediately suggests they torture him for information, which everyone else refuses to allow, though Darrow is still jonesing for answers as to how all of this could have happened, so it shouldn't be all that surprising when Cassius rouses him from bed later to save Diomedes from, you guessed it, Sevro's torture. Well, they're able to put a stop to it before Sevro goes too far. This leads to Cassius and Sevro having a down and dirty fight, during which Cassius goes too far because, insert facepalm here, Lyria told him about Victra and Ulysses, and like, sigh, Lyria, why? But that's all we're going to say about that, because she suffers enough when she tries to break up the fight and Cassius mistakenly knocks her out. Badly. Really badly. Thankfully, this does finally lead to a confrontation, albeit a verbal rather than physical one, between Darrow and Sevro, with Sevro finally explaining what happened with Victra and Ulysses, and how he feels like not being there means he can't return home. Darrow does his best to disabuse his BFF of this notion, though he knows he will have to wait and see whether or not his bolstering attempts worked, especially as in the days after, Sevro hunkers down in the machine shop and is rarely seen.
When they arrive at Io, they have to hang out in orbit for days, waiting for the Volk ships to depart. When they finally do approach, even Sevro doesn't laugh about the ruin Fa made of the once well-defended moon. They set down several hundred kilometers from their destination, and Sevro and Darrow move in first to scout the area. And while Sevro isn't too happy when Cassius and Aure show up with Diomedes in tow, Darrow is more understanding. After all, Cassius does make a good point when he insists that the Ra need to see this. Still, there's a good bit of back and forth about whether or not Diomedes can be trusted, at least until Sevro gets tired of it and accepts the man's parole, apparently trusting that he'll keep it. And so they finally enter Sungrave, through the front door rather than the tunnels, as it's been blown wide open anyway. The city is littered with corpses, including that of the dragon the Obsidian slayed. Eventually, Darrow insists that Sevro, Cassius, and Aure split off to find the Omega Torch because he, apparently, has business with Diomedes. He also asks for the man's parole, which is given, and then Darrow unlocks Diomedes' cuffs, and lets him wander off on his own to look for his kin. He finds his younger brothers, but not his grandmother, younger sister, or aunt, who were, of course, taken captive. And while they wait for Ori to receive word back from Athena, Darrow tries his best to convince Diomedes that while they might not be on the same side exactly, they do share a common enemy. Not Fa, but rather the person who is pulling his strings. But before he can get any thoughts or even expressions out of the ever-impassive Diomedes, Cassius calls in with the news of an enemy party nearby. Darrow insists that he not engage, but when Cassius sees them ushering a column of pink and violet children toward their shuttle, he insists on helping them. Now, he might not have been trying to call Darrow's bluff, but knowing that Cassius can't do the thing on his own, Darrow orders Cassius to wait for his support. Severo refuses to come to their aid, and Darrow also has to leave Diomedes behind, knowing that the man likely won't head to the perfumery as promised. But after notifying Lyria that she needs to pick up Ori and Severo and lend additional support, he's off to save some moonies. What follows is one hell of a fight, because despite these being much more well-trained obsidians than Cassius is used to, he and Darrow have top-notch armor, are both in good form themselves, and let's be real, work very well in concert. Wink, wink. All of this leads to them downing the transport in the end, and while some of the captives are injured, they're certainly way better off than they would have been in the hands of the obsidians.
Of course, it's not all's well that ends well just like that, as more obsidians show up, just like Darrow thought they would. He spears the heads of some of the obsidians they killed with his razor and confronts the Braves who have shown up, specifically insulting their leader, Skard, whom he fought with in the Corps years ago, and eventually even shows his face before announcing that he has come to declare Ashvar, essentially a blood feud that only ends with death, on Fa. Skard insists this will never happen, and hey, the Rim is Darrow's enemy too, so aren't they doing him a favor? And even though his son Sigurd steps forward to remind dear old dad about how unfairly Fa treats them, further conversation is interrupted with the arrival of some... ghosts? Okay. It's just people wearing ghost cloaks who've come to take out the obsidians. The daughters of Athena have arrived, y'all! Sadly, though, they don't have the upper hand for long, and once they lose it, they're pretty bad off. At least until Severo arrives and helps Darrow capture Skard, with Lyria and the Archie not far behind to lay down some fire from the sky. Not surprisingly, Severo wants them to kill all of the obsidians, but Darrow needs them to carry a message back to their fellows. He's here, he's there, he's every fucking where, it's here, Morga. Okay, too much, maybe? Yeah, fine. Most important is the fact that Darrow repeats that he wants to challenge Fa to single combat and then leaves the obsidians, trusting they'll spread the word. Sigurd, meanwhile, agrees to come along essentially as Darrow's prisoner because he's just that tired of everything going on with Fa. But when it comes down to where they're going, Chian, who is leading this particular group of daughters, is only as forthcoming as she absolutely has to be. They're off to Europa, where Athena has taken a place called the Deep. But as for what will become of Darrow and the other golds, or to anyone on Europa's surface when Fa arrives, that's for Athena to explain. Maybe. Hopefully. Guess we'll have to wait and see.
Love how Darrow admits that despite being annoyed with Lyria at first, he's now impressed with how serious she is about learning her way around the ship.
He also notes that not only has Cassius taken to her, but surprisingly, Lyria is fond of him in return, which, like, heart eyes. The way it's worded is like, I never would have thought a red would be fond of Cassius at all, but they're like clearly best buds. Bro TP, Lyria and Cassius. That's all. That is all. I love the two of them.
It's also nice because it shows how much Cassius has grown in the last 10 years, where he's like, I can be friends with a red. I'm not so far above them that they are the ants beneath my feet. This one's really cool and I like her.
She likes whiskey. I like her. Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
Same, bro. Same.
Unfortunately, Severo was still at odds with the rest of the crew, even more so when Darrow announces they're heading to Io.
Darrow notes that Severo is staring at him as if he's unrecognizable and notes, as much as I want to say something to mend the chasm between us, I realize I cannot. I know Severo better than anyone. There's nothing he'll hear right now. No sense or argument will sound good to him.
I gotta say, this whole thing with I can't go home, I wasn't there, I'm like, my dude.
Even beyond that, at this point right now, Darrow doesn't know yet why Severo is still with them. I think Darrow does understand, and some of this is his philosophical side that's been brought out by reading The Path to the Veil, but I think he does understand that it would have been weird for Severo to immediately do like a 180 and suddenly be BFFs, but Darrow's feelings are hurt. His feelings are hurt because his BFF is still copping attitude with him. And I also understand that.
Yeah, it's rough.
And Severo is being rude to everyone. Let's be real. Understandably
like not without
so.
Good reason.
Yeah.
You know, like, but like also damn Severo.
Except for minus his like extreme reaction to Lyria. I mean, he had it at the end of our last Darrow and Lyria episode too, where he just kind of gave Lyria that you better not fucking say anything to anybody look about why he was still there. And it's like, dude, none of what happened is her fault. You can blame her and be mad at her all you want for unwittingly taking part in Electra's kidnapping. But what happened with Fa and that being the reason why Victra's ship was taken over and Victra crash landed on Mars and was attacked by the Red Hand, Lyria had no part in that. That was not on her.
And Lyria literally did everything she could to help.
Yeah, she did.
Honestly, like above and beyond, considering the fact that one, she does not have the resources that anybody else had. And two, she didn't really have a reason that she had to help. She just was like, this is the right thing to do.
She tried to go off on her own, but then she saw that the Red Hand was showing up and she ran back to Volga
and
Victra to help.
Yeah, exactly. Like she could have just abandoned them and probably been fine. Well, maybe not fine, because the Red Hand would fuck her up if they found out she was Gamma. But anyway, the point stands.
She always could have done, what's up, fellow Reds? What are we doing out here as Reds doing?
I'm a Red.
I want to
definitely not a Gamma.
I want to see, even though like it's such a niche thing, and especially because this doesn't have a show or movie or anything yet. But like, I need to see like the Lyria Steve Buscemi, hello fellow Reds cosplay. Okay, so they come across this massacre at Kalaki, and I liked Darrow's description of how they're hearing the revenants, the recordings of people crying for help, basically, you know, shouting about what's going on and what they could possibly do and being cut off. And I really, really liked that, but they weren't getting anything of note until Aure found the signal from Athena, the fallback message. Even that, like they're about to turn around and then it's like, ping. Ping. And who do they pull in this escape pod but Diomedes? Aure admits that it was a frequency used by the Ra's, like with their siblings or something like that. It's like very specific, but she knew of it because of who she was in their household, maybe even more so who she was to Diomedes. And they pull him in. And first of all, Severo is testing Aure from the minute they realize who he is. Severo is pushing buttons left and right. And part of that is his whole, like, let's torture him. Let's torture him. He's like, yeah, do you have this sort of acid on the ship, Cassius? I noticed you don't have any newts on board. So I'm guessing that's a loss, but maybe you're hiding a tank of them. And he keeps side-eyeing Aure, like glancing at her, you know, to gauge her reactions. I don't know. Severo is all about that torture life. But when I first read this, I thought maybe he really was just doing it to test Aure. Unfortunately, it turns out that's not really the case, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is classic Severo. This is Severo's playbook 101. When in doubt, lash out at the closest thing around you can comfortably call an enemy.
Well, yes, but also Severo, calm down with your torture life.
He just wants to start sticking those knives into people.
They all have such great names.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Cassius is a guest and Darrow insists that Aure can get them the info they need when they reach Sungrave, but also that info isn't likely to include how the heck Fa surprised the Rim Armadas, who then apparently couldn't escape despite their much faster ships.
Now, of course, at this point, we as readers know how all of this happened. The Lysander chapters are interspersed with these. And so we don't necessarily know all the deets yet at this point of what Lysander has found out. But we do, in fact, know that Atlas fucked everything up. Atlas fucked it all. But At this point, we know how all this happened. So it makes Darrow's line of questioning all the more maddening because we as readers can't just shout the answers in his face. We know how Diomedes ended up in this escape pod. We know why this was such a massacre, despite the fact that they had their entire fucking armada there and their ships are way better than anything found in the core. But you know.
Yeah, it makes Diomedes' unwillingness to answer anything really frustrating.
So yeah, maddening that we know the answers and want to shout them in Darrow's face but can't. It is too bad that Severo takes Darrow's desire for answers to heart, or at least that's the reasoning that Severo gives when he waits for everyone else to go to bed and then plays torture time with Diomedes.
This was easy to see coming, considering that when Darrow was musing about the hows and whys of what happened, Severo insisted that the reason they didn't run was honor, because the Rimmon Cassius have something in common. They're new to this war. They don't know what we know. Honor, if it ever existed, was the first casualty.
Obviously, Darrow stops the torture and orders Severo out. And when it becomes clear Cassius wants to follow and kick Severo's ass, Darrow recalls that the path to the Veil says, if you wish to be straightened, you must first be bent crooked. And he decides, let him get bent then.
The funny thing is, my knowledge of the word bent, and I don't know if this is a New England thing or like an everywhere thing, but my knowledge of the word bent means like you're both wasted and high as fuck. So like when he says, let them get bent, then I know what he means. But in my brain, I'm thinking that's not the bent that I know. Yeah. Let's go get drunk together, guys. Bond. Cry a bit, you know?
Get wrecked.
I was unaware of that. Usage
it might be a New
term.
England thing. I don't know.
Like bubbly.
Yeah, I'm not that New England. I grew up on the weird cusp. I grew up in Connecticut. I am not New York, Connecticut. I am technically more Western Mass / maybe Boston Mass New Englander, but still not the bubbla kind. I still pronounce my R's, okay?
Yes. Well, I've heard you. I've heard you pronounce your R's on many occasions.
All the time, yes.
Yes.
But I also use the word wicked.
Yeah, but I mean, that spread, wicked spread.
Yeah, it's like y'all.
Yeah. Like, everybody uses y'all.
Anyway.
Cassius, shockingly, seems to have the upper hand, despite the fact that he's not exactly sober. And then he really fucks up by mentioning that Severo wasn't there when Victor needed him most.
Because, clearly, Lyria spilled those beans, and Severo goes a bit mad. Understandably so, honestly. Causing Lyria to rush to Cassius's aid, and then bang, bang, boom. Literally boom. Cassius mistakenly knocks Lyria out. And it's like, at least the fight's over, but Lyria is really badly injured. And while Severo does finally admit after this whole shenanigans situation to Darrow what happened with Victor and Ulysses and how he knows about it and that he can't go home and face Victor because he wasn't there, Lysai, if only there was therapy in these stories. If only there'd been somebody that Severo could talk to about all of this. I think he still wouldn't have, but Aure, maybe? I don't know.
I would hate to be like, go talk to any pink. They've done enough.
Not because she's a pink, just because she's the only one on the ship. He's definitely not going to talk to Cassius about it. He's pissed at Lyria for telling him in the first place. And he's just care mad at Darrow about everything lately. So, you know.
Also, Ori is kind of the closest thing we have to a therapist in this entire book series.
Oh, I know. She's doing the emotional labor for everybody. But it's also like, my dude, I'm sure that the one thing your wife wants at what has to be the nadir of her life is for you to fuck off into space because you weren't there when it happened. She doesn't need you around, I'm sure. Not that Victor would admit the word need, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think Victor would be on the side of Severo doing what needs to be done for everybody. And I do think part of that is probably because she wouldn't want to admit that she needs him anyway. But she certainly, obviously would not be like, this is all your fault because you weren't there.
Yeah.
Victor would never.
It's totally your fault that you got captured by fucking Abominadrius and tortured and sold like fucking cattle at an auction and then, you know, escaped your captivity and lived in ducts murdering people for who knows how. Like, yes, this is all your fault, Severo.
Which is one of my favorite things, by the way, is that he just like lived in ducts murdering people for however long.
Again, classic Severo, right? Classic Severo. Yeah.
100%.
Winking off in ducks instead of bushes, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess Apple's lucky he didn't skin somebody that worked there and start a whole new identity.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Anyway, Dara reminds Severo that it was he who held the Sons together when he was the Jackal's captive. But Severo merely reminds Darrow that he got people killed and how much worse it would have been without Ragnar and Dancer. Darrow scoffs. So what you're saying is, without your friends, you'd be slagged and the Rising would be ashes. Welcome to the club, asshole. Where do you think I'd be without you, without our friends? Dead in a ravine, that's where. We hold each other up. We always have. That's not weakness. That's the only strength we've got. More than anyone, you've been there for me. You've been my engine for half a life. My turn.
Honestly, Darrow handled that confrontation with Severo, or well, let's call it a conversation, really well. Darrow even offers to do everything in his power to get Severo home to his family, and ASAP, if that's what Severo wants.
He, of course, leaves the staying or going up to Severo, wishing he could do more, but knowing I can't go back in time to save his son. He won't respect pity or think he deserves it. In the cold prison of our minds, we are alone with our self-hatred, our doubts, and guilt. No one more than Severo. A friend may reach through the bars and hold our hand, but they cannot open the door for us. Only the prisoner has the key. All I can do is remind him we're waiting for him when he gets out.
I really like that passage. But also, mm-hmm. It reads a little bit too much like a self-help book.
Mm-hmm.
You also need to talk to people. And I think he already made that point, right? Darrow made that point. We all need each other. We've all been there mm-hmm. for each other. But then so soon after he makes that point, he's like thinking this way. And it's like, the two do not compute. The two together do not compute. You just
what
said
about
you
also
all need
having friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the prisoner has the key. Well, sometimes you need your friends to stand out there on the other side of the bars and just yell at you and point.
Yes. Like right there.
The, right there. You, there.
The keyhole is there.
Or break down the door with an axe. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Or like when you're holding the other person's hand through the bars, be like, and now I'm guiding your hand towards the keyhole.
We're going to bring Mr. Key in for a landing. Right. Just right. Right there. Boom, click.
Look what you did. I'm so proud of you.
All I'm thinking of is like when you're trying to airplane the spoon into a baby's mouth now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what you fucking need.
Yeah, yep. I mean, seriously. Oof. Now, Cassius might have messed up earlier during his fight with Severo, bringing up what happened with Victor like he did, but he is on point when he decides, against Darrow's orders, to bring Diomedes to Sungrave with him.
Really, though, first, Cassius is absolutely correct about the fact that Diomedes needs to see what happened to his home. Absolutely correct. Particularly if they want him to, I don't know, open his mouth and speak ever. Second, Cassius does actually have the best comeback when Darrow is all, you should have asked, because Cassius is like, Severo didn't ask to torture Diomedes. But good one, Cassius. I love you. Landed it.
Which leaves Darrow musing, so much for my authority. How is it easier to control an army of millions than my two best friends? I frown. Is Cassius a best friend? Weird.
I literally just had to find a way to work that quote into this discussion. Yeah. Anytime Darrow or Cassius makes a comment about being BFFs, I'm just like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's reverting to how they were at the beginning of the very first book before Cassius found out that Darrow was the one who killed his brother. They were all good.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was fine.
They were best buds.
But they were best buds. And it's nice to see that they can actually have that relationship now that they've, you know, worked out a few things.
Truth.
Anyway, we don't know yet what Diomedes might have seen or even remember from what happened on the Dustmaker, but when Darrow insists there is someone behind Fa, he sees recognition and surprise on Diomedes' face and realizes that he's had the same worries. These are the first expressions we've seen on Diomedes' face ever.
He's just gotten a lot of Botox. Not at all, though, actually, because the way he's described by Lysander, because we know how good Lysander is with describing people.
Yeah.
Is always like, he's like scarred and doesn't care what he looks like to other people and stuff. So that was like kind of a bad joke, the Botox joke, but also, you know.
But what if he was exactly as Lysander described him, but then also with Botox?
Yeah. So he's got a bunch of scars, but he's also just
but
like.
But he's also just like,
Yes. I know we're not talking about him, but I can't resist taking at least one shot at our friend Lysander. I think, honestly, if you just replace the summaries of his chapters with a recording of an old Simpsons clip of Bart banging on a pot yelling, "I am the best, I am the best," I think that gets it across.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you lose a few of the plot details, but I feel like the sentiment is the same.
Yeah, exactly.
But really, though, we don't know what Diomedes necessarily remembers or actually saw. He knows that Helios was not Helios, but he doesn't know who he was, I'm pretty sure, even at this point. All he knows is that it was an imposter. And he was, unlike Lysander, extremely affected by the little pokey, spiny poison things, whatever the fuck they were. So what he might have seen or heard prior to being shoved into that, or well, really at any point, we don't really know, because Lysander was definitely able to perceive more of what was happening because of the leech he had. So yeah, it's like, we don't really know. So Diomedes keeping his mouth shut, it's like, for sure, it's absolutely part that he is Diomedes and just impassive as fuck and doesn't want to give anything away. But a bigger part is he might have suspicions, but he doesn't necessarily know anything or know much of anything. So like, he's also probably just keeping his mouth shut because he's like, I also don't know what the fuck these guys are going to do to me. So why would I tell them what little I do know?
Fair. However, even after detailing how impossible Fa's perfect coup of Cephi and takeover of the Rim had been, Diomedes continues to remain at least mostly impassive. And Darrow notes, whoever trained him to withhold his emotions deserves a medal. The man is less expressive than even the stone ancestors that watch us from the wall with their permanent sneers.
Oh, Diomedes. Speak a word. He does eventually, so.
I know. It's okay to have an emotion, Diomedes, I promise.
All of that said, though, it is really too bad that Darrow isn't able to drag anything out of him before Cassius calls in about the enemy sighting and then insists on saving the pink and violet children the Obsidians have taken captive. Darrow was making leeway. He was. You know, there's that inkling of maybe a conversation will happen of some sort. But then Cassius was like, enemies on the horizon. Oh, no, they've got all these little children. I'm going to go save them. And I was like, fuck, no, you can't. And Cassius was like, ha, but I'm going to. Fuck you. Which also, yay, Cassius. And here's the thing. I think that even Cassius from the original, the first three books, would have done something like this. Cassius, as much as he's kind of like shit on himself about like his ideas of honor and how he still bedded pinks and everything like that, I still believe that he had that in him where, unless you were his enemy, a la Darrow, you were either his ally, friend, or an innocent. And I think he still, even in the first few books, would have acted that way. Obviously, they wouldn't have done it. But if he thought that Darrow or anybody from his side was herding up low-color children to make them slaves, he would have done something about it. And also, you know, good on Darrow for heading off to help. I do love how he's like, I don't know if Cassius was trying to call my bluff, but damn it. Yeah. Too bad Darrow's the only one that goes to help, at least at first.
Yeah. For his usual antics in Lightbringer, Severo has quite the attitude about it. And yet again, he's a bit too much with his comment that Bellona wants to spend his life for Moonies. Let him. I'm here for my kids. Maybe think about yours for once.
Oh my God, Severo. Come on, my dude. That is too much. That is too much. Especially after you already have had this whole back and forth with Darrow about how badly you feel about not being there for Victor and Ulysses. And I get that this does kind of go along with that. But at the same time, Severo, my dude, you know that Mustang would want him to do this. You know that Pax would want him to do this. Like, calm down. Calm down, dude. I will agree. He does have a mission that he needs to see through, because them getting in contact with Athena and getting the coordinates they need and not losing that connection is imperative, not just for what's happening in the Rim, but even more so, at least probably in Severo's mind, what's happening in the core and bringing back forces and ships. But also, Don't be rude, my dude. Now you're just being rude to be rude, it feels
Don't
like.
Don't be rude, my dude.
And I love Severo so much. And I've loved him for being kind of a rude, nasty little person a lot of the time. But in this book, he's not the Severo that I really fell in love with.
What we really needed, I think, at that moment, and I don't know if this would have been better or worse, but what I think we needed at that moment was for somebody to go, you think those kids' parents loved him any less than you and Victor would have loved Ulysses?
I feel like that would have been too far. But something along
those... That's how you get shot.
Yeah, something along those lines. Like, you know, yes, mm-hmm. I am thinking about my children, and that's why I need to help these other people's children, because this is what I would want somebody to do for my child, essentially.
Yeah.
Leave Ulysses out of this, Seth. Mm-hmm.
I just got a little bit, I understood how hurt he was and how, not only on top of that, but how, like, even for Severo, how PTSD he must have been over the events of the last however long a period of time that was. But at this point, it's like, they're kids, man. They're somebody's kids. And not only that, a bunch of those kids are of the color that objectively had it the worst all the time. Mm-hmm. So maybe you go help save those kids from a really terrible fate. Maybe get your head out of your ass. Take out some of your pain on people who deserve it. How about that?
Well, thankfully, Darrow and Cassius are able to take down the transport before it sails off with its captives. And while Darrow is at first sickened by the injured, crying people on board, he soon realizes they are not crying in horror. They're crying in relief. I didn't help Cassius to save them. I helped Cassius because I didn't want him to die. And he would have died for strangers. A font of respect and love for the man grows in me. Severo called him shallow. He is not. Not by a long shot.
So adorbs. So adorbs. Especially because Darrow straight up admits, I only helped him because I didn't want him to die.
Yep.
Which is also like, Darrow, check your privilege here. Check your fucking ideas about literally everything. You should have helped for other reasons than not wanting Cassius to die. But also,
But also, aww.
Yeah.
But then the additional obsidians that Darrow knew would show up do, leaving him to muse, this is not what was supposed to happen today, so of course it happened. I actually laugh. Maybe it needed to happen for me to realize that I can't keep running. I have to take a stand somewhere, like Cassius and Severo. Am I so afraid of my own braves and the guilt they make me feel?
I do love that this was not supposed to happen today. So, like, of course it did. Isn't that kind mm-hmm. of how your life has always been, Darrow?
Yeah, 100%.
It does feel a little bit like Dante from Clerks. I wasn't mm-hmm. even supposed to be in today. I know, buddy, but...
I don't know. The wording of, like, am I so afraid of my braves and afraid of the guilt? It's like, yes, you feel guilty because you gave them a taste of freedom and then they found somebody who allowed them to take it too far. Allowed what is closer to another... This is a more of a dark revolt than just a simple obsidian rising situation. So, yeah. I mean, you should be a little bit guilty, but also not entirely, because it's not your fault that Fa exists. It's not your fault that Seffi was overthrown. Seffi was great at what she did, but there were so many strings being pulled on all ends here. Yeah, on all ends, not just with Fa, even in Seffi's own court,
yeah,
for lack of a better word. Now, that said, once they do kind of get into that fight, they're winning it until these new obsidians show up, as Darrow knew they would. But then he's like, wait, this wasn't supposed to happen. So, of course, it happened. And it's like, I mean, but you also knew they would show up. So there's that, Darrow. But it's a good thing that the daughters of Athena, Severo, and Lyria in the Archie, laying down that fire from above, arrive soon after and are able to chase off the obsidians. Though, unfortunately, this does happen at, like, great cost to the daughters who try to help them.
Darrow is, of course, disgusted with the Volk over what they've been doing, but claims he's not there to judge or punish them, but instead to remind them of the oaths they took and to guide them home. He also wants them to go and tell the warbands what they've seen and that Tir Morga has come to challenge Volsung Fa to single combat. And as he walks away from them, he knows he's opened Pandora's box, but enough is enough from this obsidian fraud.
Also, as much as Darrow is grateful to the daughters for their rescue, their leader obviously isn't fond of him, or too happy, rightfully so, after how many people they lost in this particular rescue.
There's a lot of things to unpack here, because, yes, Darrow tells the obsidians, I'm coming for your new leader. Granted, he's only really able to do that because they get help in the form of the daughters. Well, and Severo shows up and Lyria. So it wasn't just the daughters. Yeah.
Lyria came in hard.
She came in wobbly, though. He was like, her flying sucks, but she's shooting all right. So good for her, though. She's learned a lot. She's doing her job. Oh, and also earlier, we had made mention of the fact that Darrow was like, I don't think Diomedes is actually going to go to the perfumery or whatever. He didn't actually believe that Diomedes would keep his word. And whether or not Diomedes went to the perfumery, whatever it was, like exactly, or whether they found him later, he wasn't ever going to try to run off. He didn't try to run off. All of these things coming together that lead to them being on the Archie with these poor injured people that were about to be enslaved, and they've been rescued, but many of them are in like bad condition. And the daughters of Athena have lost, I don't remember how many people she said, but Chien said it was more than, it was like four times more than they'd ever lost in any previous rescue mission. And they've actually been doing this, like jumping in and saving who they could for a while now. For my part, I'm interested in this whole Europa situation, because while it's great that Athena has taken the deep, which also, what the fuck is the deep? Severo's like, what part? And Chiana's like, the whole thing. And it's like, okay. What I'm guessing is it's the entire fucking underwater world of Europa. But we've never heard of this before. We've only been to Europa once. Golden Sun was the only time we were on Europa, and we only visited Lorne's estate. We heard a little bit here and there about things that go on Europa, but it was a passing visit. Darrow was literally only there to force Lorne to help him. The deep is brought up as if it's something we should already know about. And I mean, am I wrong? Do you guys remember anything about this ever being mentioned?
I do not.
Okay, good. I was like, am I missing something? I'm like 99% sure I'm not, after my, what is essentially a third read through of this book. But even if we ignore the fact that Chien either doesn't know or won't share what will happen to the people on the surface of Europa, let's set the people on the surface aside, because obviously it's worrisome that she's just like, I don't know, I guess we'll have to ask Athena, because there's a lot of people on the surface that aren't just gold. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. But I'm very much like, put some question marks around my head in a halo regarding how long they can survive down there if they do in fact blow those sea lifts. Because that's what Chien says. She's like, yeah, we're not worried about when Fa comes. We're just going to blow the sea lifts. So do they have like an entire farming situation down there? Do they have unlimited air supply? Do they have unlimited ability to make fresh water? There's water all around them. So let's assume they have either that water is fresh water, even though they're technically called oceans, or they can desalinate it. Okay, let's assume the water thing isn't an issue. Are they growing plants? Are there animals? What is the deep? Other than a bad character from The Boys.
I just think she's operating on the principle that, you know, things are better down where it's wetter.
Oh my under God.
Under the sea.
Seth, I love you so much.
I just like, if you blow the sea lifts, which is smart in the immediate, because then Fa can't get down there easily. That doesn't mean he can't get down there at all, because there have to be other ways, right? They've got all the technology in the world here. But if you blow the sea lifts and you cannot easily get your people to the surface, and you also, they're on the surface, they hold Demeter's garter. They could hold a fucking siege on you for years, decades maybe.
But he can't. Not because he doesn't have the material, but because what his army's built out of. He didn't build his army out of people who are going to be content to sit around waiting until they can get out of the water to attack somebody when there are other targets they could be taking.
No, you're not wrong about that.
Yeah,
like, they have a hard time keeping them. But also, again, how long can you actually survive? Maybe Athena hasn't thought about the fact that Fa isn't just working on his own and might have other people who are willing to do that, pulling his strings. I don't know. The way we leave this, particularly when Darrow is like, oh, good to see a pair of red eyes in the fight. He holds out his hand and she's just like,
whoop. She's like, fuck no.
She's like, yeah, you know, we used to have lots more pairs of those red eyes before somebody betrayed all the Sons of Ares. So the core would be okay.
You dick.
Yeah. We leave them in this situation where it's like, dude, Darrow, they all know what you did. Chion, she's like, I'm not shaking your hand. I just lost a bunch of people, but I'm sorry, not sorry. I'm pretty sure that's not her only reason for not shaking your hand, Darrow. And you've got Cassius, who killed fucking Ares on your ship. And I don't know if there's like the major gamma issue here out in the rim that there is on Mars. They don't really talk about it all that much, but let's assume that Lyria can pass as any red. Hello, fellow Reds.
Yeah.
I am totally not a gamma, but also like Diomedes. Diomedes is their literal rim enslaver in their minds, no matter how not terrible he is and how much him and Aure might be weirdly in love with each other. I still do not understand this relationship or anything that's happening with it at all. But
do you think if they had a kid, their kid would be a rose gold?
Pax has rose gold eyes, but that's Darrow and Mustang. So I don't know. Well, and also I don't know that Pink's, I'm going to guess that amongst
I just thought of it. Oh,
she can get carved to have a kid maybe, but also their bones are like fucking bird fragile. So I'm not really sure, like she'd have to get entirely carved. Like there would have to be
like Darrow carved, like that kind of carved.
Yeah. Like they would have to change her literal physical makeup in order for her to be able to handle a child.
Well, not to mention go some way to breaking the extremely sadistic mental blocks they put into all Panks. I don't know. I don't see Diomedes as the kind of guy who's going to be like,
no.
Yeah, I know what they do to you, but I'm okay with doing this.
But also, there's still this question in my mind about Diomedes and Aure and how this fucking happened in the first place. She is a spy in his household. He is the son of Ra, the oldest living son, because his older brother died in the Battle of Ilium. But they clearly, I mean, in Iron Gold, Lysander knows they're in love. And also, it's noted by Darrow, I think in these chapters, he notes that he can like see something pass between them. And he just like knows that they're all for each other. I don't know. I don't know, man. Anyway. All right. So this episode being called The Ruin of Ra, and I feel like we didn't touch too much on how it is other than kind of briefly in the summary, but Io is destroyed. We already know from our last episode that Fa has taken the garter. The doors of Sungrave, supposedly impenetrable home of the House of Ra, have been blown wide open. All of the family members are either gone or murdered. The home is just kind of sacked and destroyed. And yes, Diomedes is still alive, but he is there with people who are purportedly his enemies at this point. Darrow, Cassius, Severo, not so much Aure maybe because she's still in love or whatever the fuck is going on there. Three of his family members are missing entirely, and that does not bode well. The rest of his family is dead. Yeah, man, I don't know. His whole moon is gone to him. This is the family in the rim. Their life is fucked. All because of this obsidian dude. And it's like, sure, at the end, yay, they rescue some pinks and violets and they have Sigurd on their side now, such as he can be. And Darrow has sent the other obsidians that they let live off to spread the word about how he's going to come and kill Fa as soon as he can. But Diomedes' life is in fucking ruins. Yet he still has hardly said a word. But he also didn't break his parole, despite all of this.
It's true. I'm sorry. I think I must have, at some earlier point, compared Diomedes to Johnny Tightlips.
I don't know
from The Simpsons. It's he gets introduced in the episode where Fat Tony gets Krusty's daughter's violin. He gets shot at some point, and they're like, "Johnny, where's the bullet? Hey, oh, who says I got a bullet in me?" Like that kind of thing. Like just like absolutely. Gotcha. At one point, there's like, "Hey, who says I got a mother?" You know, like that kind of thing.
But I don't know. As golds go, the Ra's weren't terrible, which I think we talked about in our last episode. If this had been most families in the core that were on the society side, I'd be like, yeah, whatever, fuck it. But like, I don't know. Darrow witnesses the ruin of this family. And even he, I mean, shit, as much as Severo's kind of cackling a little bit when they come upon the massacre at Kalki, the fact that even he's not laughing when they show up on Io, I think that's really important to note. And also, it's sad that Diomedes has to... Cassius, again, I said, was super right for bringing Diomedes along because he needed to see it, but it's also fucking sad that he had to. Now, it's time for In Memoriam.
Diomedes' younger brothers, Marius and Pelleron, all raw, murdered in cold blood when the Oscomani took Sungrave.
The daughters of Athena who perished in the rescue of the Low Colors, who, let's be real, Darrow and Cassius pretty clearly wouldn't have been able to save on their own.
And I feel like because Jonathan isn't here, I need to say, like, all of the other gazillions of people who died.
Let's also remember all of the other Low Colors who died.
And Golds and Greys and whoever else. Yes, there's a lot of them.
So many people died.
So many people died.
Many Bothans died.
My favorite interpretation of that was, have you guys read the Tag and Bink? It was a short-lived, like, a really tiny miniseries. But there was this guy named Manny Bothans. And Manny Bothans died.
But yes, it is very much like Manny Bothans died for Fa and the Ascomani and whoever else. Some Obsidians died too, but nobody cares about them. They all deserved it. So as we close out the episode, just want to give a shout out to our Heroes Tier patron, Tommy of the TKOK Podcast Network. Thank you so much for supporting us. Once again, I'm Tara, along with fellow host Nick, and I don't even know, like, you're not even regular guest host. You're just, like, kind of always here host.
I'm hanging around. Somewhere in the background.
Don't forget.
And me, I was here all along.
Don't forget that you can always hit us up at Sogs and Sass on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or email us at sogsandsass@gmail.com with any comments or thoughts you might have. Our next episode, titled The Daughters, will cover Lyria and Darrow's POVs from chapter 57 through chapter 63 in part 3 of Lightbringer. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment for early access to our recordings.
Thank you for listening to the Sagas and Sass podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Sagas and Sass.